this morning. I'm going to be talking about this, so I hope you've all had a chance to download it and read it in great depth. No, don't laugh. In terms of module 3, I think it is, in the records management assessment tool, that will be revised because it covers storage, and obviously we were waiting for this thing to be issued, so that module will be coming out soon once we've actually had a chance to further develop that module in the records management assessment tool. Okay. This morning I'm basically going to cover these points. I'd like to give you a bit of a background to the revision of the standard to understand where it came from and why we did it. Have a brief look at the standard, its aims and its scope. A brief overview of the standard, what's actually in there, what's changed. I'm not going to go through every single principle because basically you can read it, and it also obviously draws an awful lot on the older standard, so there's a lot of familiarity that should be there in relation to storage. What I am going to do is have a look at principle 1, because that is a really major change in the overall standard and what we're aiming to achieve. I'll look at who's responsible for storage these days, what you need to do to comply, and what are the common issues that are already starting to come up, the common questions, and some ideas about the response to those questions, particularly if they're being fired at you, and some obviously some tips. Okay, the background to the revision. As many of you are aware, we issued a storage standard many, many years ago. It was issued in 2000. It was actually one of the earliest standards issued under the State Records Act, and was designed to assist public officers with implementing Section 11 of the Act, which is to ensure the safe custody and proper preservation of the state's records, which are in your control. In other words, they have not been transferred as archives. They are still in your control and your responsibility. The requirements of this standard in 2000 were phased in over a number of years. So we phased in the requirements from 2001 through to 2005, and this was to assist public officers understand what the requirements were and work through the processes of implementing these requirements. Now, this was particularly important in 2000 because there'd never been formal requirements for record storage in New South Wales. So this was the first time you'd actually had to grapple with a records storage standard. Now, by 2011, the 2000 standard was looking a little out of date. There'd also been some new national and international developments in the storage of records. So it was time to look at how we set requirements for record storage. And so we started a review of the records management of this record storage standard. In May, you were all contacted about the standard, and we sought your feedback, particularly your experiences in implementing the standard, because this would provide valuable insight to me as the reviewer and reviser of the standard. 54 public officers responded to this request for feedback, and I thank you all very much for your comments and your suggestions, because they were all useful, they were all helpful, and helped me to think through how do we do this, how do we actually set a requirement around record storage. Now, following the feedback process, I then reviewed the standard, I looked at your comments, I looked at the national and international best practice as at 2011, and I then went through the process of drafting a new storage standard in consulting with my colleagues at State Records. In October, we released the draft standard for your consultation and comment. 22 public officers provided us with written comments on the revised draft standard. No public office rejected the draft, and many of the submissions that we received were supportive and endorsed the draft standard. Now, I've put a table of commentary about the consultation process up on the website, so if you're interested in how we manage the consultation process, all the detail is up on the website in the table of commentary. Okay, so let's have a look at the new standard. Okay, the standard and a range of guidance are up on the website. Guideline 11, Solutions for Storage, which is the really chunky guideline about storage and how to do it, is currently being revised. It will be out next month. The aim of the new storage standard is to build on the implementation work that's been done in the 2000 standard and the good storage practices that have emerged as the outcome of that 2000 standard. Like the previous standard, this new storage standard establishes minimum compliance requirements for the storage of state records. These requirements are mandatory for all public offices. The primary aim in setting requirements for storage is to guide you in your decisions and actions in how you store state records. Now, these decisions and actions should ensure that the record storage you use is cost-effective and efficient, first of all. It also should ensure that records are secure, that they're protected, and that they're accessible for as long as they're required to meet your business and accountability needs in your organisation. And lastly, these decisions and actions should ensure that records of continuing value, that might be records that have a long-term retention, that is more than 30 years, or records that are destined to become state archives, are stored in the best possible conditions for as long as they actually need to be in storage. So those are our aims with this standard. Now, the storage of records is a key element of your records management program. By implementing the standard, you're able to protect these very important information assets. By meeting the requirements of the standard, your organisations can actually demonstrate that they're storing and protecting their information assets, and more importantly, that because the storage of records is being planned and managed appropriately in their organisation, you're also storing records in very cost-effective and efficient ways. So in other words, you're getting some win-wins out of this. You're not just meeting requirements under the Act, you're also doing some good stuff for your organisation and looking at saving money. Okay, the scope of the standard. Basically, this standard applies to records that have a physical format. So in other words, you can pick them up, you can hold them in your hand. There's a handy list of physical formats on the overhead, so I'm not going to read all those out, but that's basically what it covers. It also covers records created and maintained by contractors on behalf of your organisation as part of outsourcing arrangements. So when you outsource something, you need to set requirements in that contract about storage and what your contractors or your service providers are actually doing in relation to the storage of records. It also covers records stored by storage providers, so your commercial storer. Now, when selecting commercial storage, your organisation must ensure that all aspects of the storage facility, the conditions, the practices and other arrangements actually conform to the requirements of the standard. So you use your standard as part of your process for selecting storage. Basically, at the end of the day, the responsibility for how you store records rests with the public office, regardless of where you actually store those records. So whether you're using a commercial storage arrangement or whether you've built your own storage facility and you're using it, at the end of the day, the responsibility for meeting the standard and ensuring your records are stored appropriately rests with the public office. Now, I've put up on the slide that this standard does not apply to the storage of digital records in online systems or network services. So it's not for digital record keeping in terms of how you store your records. Obviously, we're recommending that you store your digital records on network servers until you actually undertake disposal of those records. However, if you've backed up your digital records to tape or you've saved them onto CD-ROMs or DVDs, etc., then the standard does actually cover those kinds of, you've put them into a physical format, you've put them onto a media that has to be stored somewhere. Now, the standard also does not cover state archives that have been transferred to the control of state records. The standard does contain lots of references to long-term records and to state archives, but that's so that you're getting the idea of thinking about what have we actually got, what is the best I can do for it now before it crosses that archival threshold and becomes a state archive. So in other words, we don't leave it until it's transferred to state records for the best possible conditions. We try to do the best right from the word go. So we've got that continuum thinking happening about how we store records. But at the end of the day, this standard does not apply to the storage of state archives. That's under a distributed management agreement that you execute with us. Okay, the new standard. Like the old standard, it has 7 principles. Each principle has an explanation of what the principle actually means. It contains minimum compliance requirements, the things that you need to do to meet that principle, and examples of evidence. And the examples of evidence are actually a new feature for our standards and are designed to provide you with tangible ideas and examples of how your organisation might meet the requirement. So they're not the I must do everything that's listed in the examples of evidence. They're there to trigger you to think about how you can actually implement this principle and what kinds of documents you might need to develop or design in your organisation. The standard also has a range of appendices. They're all listed on the overhead. There's a consolidated checklist of requirements. So if you want to see all the requirements in one go, that's in Appendix A. If you want to see the requirements matched up to the relevant guidance, that's in Appendix B. And to assist you in implementing this new standard, I've done a mapping of the new standard's requirements to the old standard, so you can see exactly what's new and where older requirements have carried forth into the new standard. So that's all in Appendix C. And lastly, we move the further references and bibliography out to the back, so that's in Appendix D. So what's changed between the old and the new? Well, there's still 7 principles, which is the same. However, those principles and the compliance requirements now reflect more current thinking about record storage. So they've been refined and distilled a little bit further. They reflect recent national and international best practice. We now have an Australian standard on physical storage, AS1015, which was issued last year. They also look towards the new storage standards that have been set for the Victorian and New Zealand public sectors. And it also reflects ISO 11799, which is the international standard for the storage of archives. So it's drawing upon all the best thinking that's out there about record storage. There are 8 new compliance requirements, and I've listed them all there, but you can see them all when you have a look at Appendix C. They're all identified in as brand new. And also remember that Appendix does the mapping between the old and the new, so you can see exactly what you might need to be picking up as new work items. Now, the standard and its requirements were issued by Government Gazette last Friday, the 2nd of March, and we've taken in a phased-in approach with the compliance requirements. So anything that was in the old standard commenced on the day that the standard was issued. So anything that you see in Appendix C that has come from the 2000 standard is operating right now, because basically there's been 11 years of implementation, so there was no need to actually restart the clock on those. However, with anything that's a new requirement in this standard, those 8 new compliance requirements, they don't come into effect until the 2nd of March next year. And there's a compliance timetable on the website as well. So when you open up the page on the storage standard, there's a compliance timetable there if you want to print that off and distribute that in meetings, etc. Now, what I'd like to do is actually look at the first principle, the authorisation principle, because this is really, in a way, the outcome of our research and our thinking about storage and the need to highlight the importance of organisational planning and authorisation for record storage areas and facilities. In the old standard, this was covered as the first requirement in the first principle, and then there was nothing else about the authorisation of where we actually store our records. So we've picked this up and we've given it a stronger emphasis through this first principle, and what we're aiming at is establishing the importance of a framework for planning and managing your record storage in your organisation. In other words, it's not something that we do as an off chance, it's actually something that we plan and manage. And what we're intending is that by doing this work, your organisations are going to be able to identify what records you need to store, what physical records you've got, what you need to store, where they should be stored, how long they need to be in storage. And by doing this kind of planning work, you're able to then develop economies of scale. So in other words, you can plan that you put all the things that are going to become state archives into a particularly good repository. Things that you're only going to need to keep for a shorter period of time, doesn't need as great or as fantastic environmental conditions, can go in something that is appropriate. Therefore, you don't actually have to put everything into the beautiful air-conditioned repository. You can actually start managing what goes where, how long we're actually keeping it in there, and actually starting to forecast what's happening with your records quantities, whether they're growing, whether they're decreasing, what we're doing with them. As you know, the storage of records in our organisations can sometimes be an organic process, and the next thing you know is that there's been new record storage areas created, or facilities have suddenly started to be used. Oh, that's where we're putting the records, they're out the back in that depot building out there. There's very little organisational coordination that happens about record storage. What this principle is about is trying to get that organisational coordination happening. So let's actually plan this, let's manage it, let's get some economies of scale, let's start getting some cost effectiveness into our storage programs. Okay, so who's responsible? With the storage standard, we've actually established that the nominated senior officer for records management in your organisation needs to be assigned the responsibility for making decisions and authorising record storage areas and facilities. Now, the actual assessment of the facilities and the areas to ensure that they're actually suitable, that they meet the requirements of the standard, and making those initial decisions about what's good and what's not good needs to include the records manager. So it needs to include the people who have the expertise in the area as part of that decision-making process. But at the end of the day, we've actually slated home responsibility to the nominated senior officer, but ensuring that that expertise is actually brought into the decision-making process. In other words, it's not just about making cost savings, it's actually about making good decisions for where the records get stored. Now, as part of the responsibility for record storage, we're suggesting, we haven't made it a formal requirement, but we are suggesting that what you need to do is look at developing comprehensive storage plans. So looking at all the different types of records, as in the different formats that you have, looking at where, how they're stored, what kinds of storage locations do they need to be in, being across whatever it is that you create in your organisation, being able to forecast your future storage needs, because you know how much this stuff grows by each year. So in other words, how many more bays do we use each year? So therefore, in 5 years' time, we'll need this. However, when you subtract what you're doing in terms of disposal, you can then get a realistic picture of where you're going with your storage. You can also use the storage plan as part of your planning process and upgrading process of record storage facilities, because naturally you need to do maintenance on these facilities, but they also just require upgrading from time to time because they need a new aircon plant or whatever. So you pop that into the storage plan. And lastly, on the overhead, looking at the reduction of records in your storage facility. So in other words, what are we actually doing to reduce the quantity of records in these things? So in other words, are we actually doing disposal? Are we doing transfer to state records? So in other words, we don't just have stuff sitting unsentenced in these storage facilities. So as part of this process under Principle 1, developing a storage plan, which means you can actually plan what is going into storage and how we're actually managing it through its life. Okay, so in terms of what do I need to do to comply, briefly, if you believe and you've done an assessment that you comply with the 2000 standard, then all you need to do is start looking at the new requirements and start working through the process of implementing those in your organisation. Now, if you don't believe that you comply with the 2000 standard, then you're going to need to do some remedial work and look at the requirements and then start looking at the newer requirements. I would suggest look at anything that started last Friday and work through those, then start working through your newer requirements. Now, if you're not sure at all about where you are in terms of record storage standards, then I would do an assessment using Appendix A of the storage standard and see what are the hot issues and then work out from there. Remember that Appendix B provides a lot of practical help about how to actually do aspects of this. Now, the two questions I have been asked since this went out last Friday is, how much is it going to cost and what are the risks if we don't comply? So what I thought I would do is look at these two questions and give you some answers so that when these questions are fired at you, you have some ideas. Okay, in terms of the first question, how much is it going to cost? This is going to depend on your organisation and what you actually need to do to comply. I can't give you a magic figure because I don't know what you actually need to do in order to improve your storage or to meet the requirements of the standard. Now, if you haven't implemented the old standard or you have concerns about some of your storage and you need to improve it, it's obviously going to take some work. It's obviously going to take some money. If you just need to implement the new requirements, then these are more of an administrative task. They're not like going and building a building or upgrading a building or anything like that. They're really about setting aside time to actually look at how we plan our storage, setting aside time to actually monitor our record storage and what's actually happening in the storage facility. On the issue of cost, I would add that the more planning you do about record storage, the more cost-effective your storage is going to become. If you know what you have, how long you need to keep it, then you can start making those economies of scale. You can also forecast what you actually need realistically in terms of storage. Rather than the organic storage approach, you can actually establish a budget for your record storage and work out how you can start getting better efficiencies through that budget. In terms of reducing storage costs, it's really important that you look at the sentencing and disposal of records. Do you remember when we did the record storage and disposal survey back in 2008? Does that ring a bell for everyone? Okay, in 2008 we found that New South Wales government was storing 2.8 million boxes of records at a total cost of $12.8 million per annum. That's an estimated cost. Now, obviously, if we're able to plan what's happening with our storage and we're able to execute our FRDAs and our GDAs and start the disposal process happening, we can actually reduce the quantity of records that we actually store. We do not need to keep everything, but we need to manage it properly. But having our plan, using our disposal authorities, we can actually start getting some cost savings and reducing those quantities of records. So that's a good thing to talk about to the bean counters. If you can help me with the sentencing and disposal, we can actually start reducing this. So what are the risks if we don't comply? Well, basically, if you don't comply, the state records are not safe and secure, and there is also an increased risk that they could be damaged, they could be lost, or they could be stolen. For important information assets of your organisation and the state of New South Wales, this is really not appropriate, and it's also a failure to meet a major requirement of the State Records Act. Now, that's the compliance end of the stick, and remember that there's also Section 21 of the State Records Act, which is about neglecting records, and penalties apply there. But what I would emphasise to you, to emphasise to your business, is that there's also huge business implications for your organisation if we don't actually store records properly. If we can't locate or find records in storage because we don't have good identification and control over our records, or we're not storing them in appropriate conditions and they're actually getting damaged in there, then how do we make decisions? How do we use records to account for our actions? How do we answer GIPA inquiries where people want to see the records that actually pertain to them? Now, what I'd like to do is mention that record storage is not just an issue for the records management community. It's also of interest to a broader community. Last week, the Victorian Ombudsman released this report. It's an investigation into the storage and management of ward records by a Victorian department. These are obviously very important records if you've been a ward of the state. What they found in their report and what they were critical of was the poor storage and management of these particular records. whilst the report is about broader management, identification and control matters, it does address the issue of very poor storage for incredibly important long-term records, which had been subject to floods and rat infestations in the storage areas. So I'm just mentioning this as it's not just us that are interested in poor storage and improving storage, but there are others who are looking as well. If you're interested in that report, it's on the Victorian Ombudsman's website. Interesting reading. Okay, so to finish up today, what I would like to do is just refer you back to the website. The standard is on the website. There is a new record keeping in brief, number 60, which covers the standard, what's changed, how do I comply, a lot of what I've actually spoken about today. We've got revised versions of RIB and RIB 14, Handle with Care, RIB 15, Records in Transit. They're all up there. And as I said, Guideline 11 is coming out next month, which will be a revised version of Solutions for Storage, bringing into account all the new requirements in the standard. And the other thing is, contact us at Government Recordkeeping if you do have questions or queries about the standard, because we're always very happy to talk to you about all of that. Thank you.